try not to squeak.
All right, well, first let's start with how long you've been working on this and what got you interested.
Okay, well, we first got into this story almost 3 years ago when we picked up nothing more than a rumor, really, in San Antonio that a key figure in the Box 13 election controversy perhaps was willing to tell what had actually happened. This was just a rumor. There was no name given, just that there was someone who had played a role. So we went to our files and looked up our considerable file on the Box 13 election, and most of the people were dead, but there were a few names that were worth checking out, and including the election judge, Louis Salas. He had played a key role, and we thought it could have been him. We didn't know at that time.
And this was the kind of story that people had been wondering about for a long time.
Oh, that's right. The whole state of Texas, I guess you could say for 29 years, had wondered what really had happened in Box 13. It was a tantalizing mystery that never had been unraveled, and as people died off, the participants, there was a great danger that the true story never would be told. That's why this rumor that a man was willing to talk at this late stage really intrigued us. So we went diligently after this to track down this rumor, and we looked up Mr. Salas's name and the Alice phone book. We called him, and we ascertained that he was the person referred to, but unfortunately he was not ready to tell his story back then. In fact, he was adamantly opposed to telling anything.
Well, Alice is a long way from Dallas. That must have been a lot of traveling over the years to finally get this story out.
That's right. It took many, many interviews, not only in Alice, but in other sections of South Texas. And it was a continuing effort that slowly but surely began to unravel what happened. It wasn't told in one confession or anything of that nature. Over this period of 2.5 to 3 years, Salas gradually revealed more and more of what happened until towards the end he decided to make a total revelation of the story.
Did he tell you why he wanted to come clean, so to speak?
Yes, he indicated that he wanted to clear this up before he died, so to speak, to set history straight, and also at the same time to clear his conscience. He had acted as a loyal political party man, but his conscience obviously had bothered him ever since.
Okay, now let's go back and have a history lesson. What was the political situation in the late 1940s when Lyndon Johnson was trying to get out of the House and into the Senate and win his first statewide race?
Yes, this chance to get into the Senate was his first major political break, looking back on it. And as he was throughout his life, Johnson was a very ambitious politician, and he seized on this opportunity to break out of the House and get into the Senate. During those years, South Texas was totally Democratic, as was the whole state of Texas. And in this particular area below San Antonio, was controlled totally by a political strongman named George Parr. Lived in San Diego, Texas, that's in Duval County, and was known as the Duke of Duval. And Parr had pretty much mastery of the political situation in 7 or 8 South Texas counties and could deliver, nobody ever questioned this, could deliver just about whatever vote he wanted to deliver.
So it was like an urban boss in a rural surrounding.
Yes, an extremely rural setup down there. San Diego's a small town. And Alice, which is 10 miles away, is not much bigger. And it's rural, it's brush country, hot and dry. Now there's considerable oil and cattle ranching down there. But It never has been an industrial area. It's a remote rural section of the state.
So, in a sense, Parr took care of the significant Mexican-American community in that part of the state, and the Mexican-Americans took care of whatever politician Parr decided to back. Is that the way the game was played?
Yes, that's the way it worked, and it must be stated that Parr was by no means a dictator. He was a benevolent person. He, without question, he did a great amount of good for these impoverished Mexican-Americans who make up the bulk of the population in that part of the state. He was the patron, the man who took care of people. This is important. He was not a dictator issuing orders. He was the helper, the man who solved problems and assisted people. And in return, he got their loyalty, which paid off at the ballot box.
And Lyndon Johnson was neither poor nor Mexican-American. How did he get hooked up with Parr?
Well, I don't pretend to know the full background of the Johnson-Parr relationship, but as an astute politician, Lyndon knew who controlled the votes, as every politician did, in South Texas. He was by no means the only politician who, let's say, paid homage to George Parr. Every man who wanted to be elected in Texas, including national candidates who wanted the Texas vote, did the very same thing. The state was totally Democratic. To win an election, you had to be a Democrat, and to make sure of the South Texas vote, which was important, George Parr had to be on your side.
And the election was won in the primary, right?
Oh, totally. The whole contest was in the primary. Once the Democratic nominee was selected, he was without doubt the winner in the general election in November. That's not the case today, but it was back in the 40s.
So now Johnson was beaten, in a sense, first time around in this primary. Isn't that right?
Yes, he was. There was a three-candidate primary, and Coke Stevenson, the man whom Johnson ended up by edging out, was the clear, was the dominant candidate. Johnson came in second. And this third man, his name was George Petty, siphoned off about 100,000 votes. If Petty had not been in the contest, Stevenson would have been the nominee of the party. But the third man threw it into a runoff primary because Stevenson did not have a full majority of the vote cast. That caused the second runoff, and that's the runoff that was decided by Box 13. So Stevenson really had the lead right from the start of the first primary and all the way through the second primary, except for what happened with these 200 additional votes.
And when it got down to a race between Johnson and Stevenson in the second election, that was a pretty close one. And now, did Johnson go, as to the best of your knowledge, to Parr and say, "I need your help, this is going to be close"?
This was on the runoff primary you're referring? It was a tight race. The first runoff showed that Stevenson was the leader, but Johnson wasn't that far behind. He had considerable support. And Stevenson made then, after the first primary, there was a four-week period before the runoff, made what many observers in hindsight said was a mistake. He left Texas and went to Washington, ostensibly to look for a place to live when he was elected senator. Johnson, on the other hand, stayed in Texas and campaigned very strenuously during those 4 weeks in hopes of winning the runoff contest. And, of course, part of that 4 weeks was spent in South Texas. But again, this was not unusual. Every politician would have spent some time in South Texas. It probably wouldn't have done Stevenson much good then because Parr had already decided who his man was, and it was Johnson, not Stevenson. But as to what took place in those 4 weeks, we really don't know, because in terms of the Johnson-Parr contacts, because if Johnson had won the runoff by a clear edge, there would have been no need for anybody to manipulate any votes.
Well, Johnson was something of a spectacle at that time, wasn't he, as a politician and in his campaign style?
Yes, he was. All accounts indicate that Johnson was a flamboyant, brash campaigner, as opposed to the more staid Coke Stevenson, who restricted his campaigning to more or less routine speeches on the radio and campaign and rally appearances. Johnson used a helicopter, which was relatively unknown in those days, especially for politics, and he would buzz around the state and cause all kinds of uproars and attention when he landed in these small towns. It was a very good campaign a gimmick to use. It probably was that.
But when it came around to election day, in September, I believe, was that when the runoff was?
Oh, the first primary is in July. The runoff, August 28th.
August 28th, okay. So when it came around to August and actually counting votes, things got awfully close. Now, where does Louis Salas enter the scene?
It turned out to be an extremely close contest, probably closer than anybody would have even guessed. The lead during the election day, when the polls closed and the votes were counted, the lead went back and forth between Stevenson and Johnson. Salas, of course, was holding down Box 13, a precinct of Mexican Americans in Alice. He was in charge of that precinct, and he reported unofficially a total for his precinct, which was Johnson around 1,780, Stevenson right at 770. And that was an unofficial tally given by Louis Salas to the correspondent of the Texas Election Bureau, who relayed that vote in on election night. After that, Salas's role, would have been completed. He had turned in a tally, and it was one-sided in favor of Johnson, and that was that. Making an assumption here, I think we can assume that they figured Johnson was going to win the election. However, as the vote trickled in, not only election night, but the next day and the second day, it turned out that Stevenson was maintaining an edge, a narrow edge, but nevertheless, as all the votes came in, Stevenson still held a very narrow lead, and something had to be done if Johnson were to pull this election out.
Salas's version of it, what happened?
Well, Salas's version is that a meeting was held in San Diego, Texas, at which George Parr presided, and there were some Democratic Party officials there from Jim Wells County, and he says that Lyndon Johnson was there, and that, of course, Salas was there. He says that this was on the third day, virtually all the vote was in, and Stevenson held a razor-edge margin. Salas says that Johnson told Parr if he could get 200 more votes, he would have the election won. Parr then turned to Salas, according to Salas' account, and said, "We want you to add those votes." Salas said he declined to add the votes, but agreed to certify additional votes if someone else were to actually add them to the poll sheet. And that is what Salas says happened that very night in an office building in Alice, Texas. 202 names were added to the poll list in alphabetical order, shown as voting for Johnson. One additional name was added, shown voting for Stevenson. So Johnson's total, as a result of the additional names added to the Box 13 list, went up by 202 votes. Stevenson's went up by one vote. And statewide, out of 1 million votes cast, Johnson had an 87-vote margin. And that's what sent him into the U.S. Senate.
Nickname Landslide Lyndon.
And he was known thereafter, in Texas anyway, as Landslide Lyndon.
Well, they weren't exactly subtle about this process of adding votes to the official list of people who had voted, were they?
It appeared to be done almost casually, And again, one can only assume perhaps this had been done before and it was nothing new, because by adding the names in alphabetical order, as Salas says they did, it would have been an outright fraud if this had ever been revealed. There was no attempt, apparently, to even pretend that these names were those of people who had actually come in and voted. They just simply began listing names beginning with the letter A, the letter B, and C, and so forth. And Salas says the names, contrary to some popular stories about the Box 13 scandal, did not come from tombstones or from the cemetery. They came from the actual poll tax list showing eligible voters in Jimwell in Box 13, but these people had not voted that day for one reason or another. For example, Salas said, we added the name of Hector Cerda. He said Cerda was actually in Kingsville, Texas that day, which is about 25 miles away, and was a Stevenson man. He said, we voted him for Johnson, and he got mad as the devil.
Well, just to get off the subject for a minute, was there any indication from him as to why they put one vote down for Stevenson when they were doing this?
No, he never has indicated why that occurred, and perhaps it was done inadvertently, or more likely to give a semblance of some sort of balance there, because the original vote was so lopsided. Johnson close to 1,800 votes, and Stevenson only seven seventy, I think it was. So they maintain this one-sided balance by giving Johnson 202 and Stevenson one, but that might have been an error. I really don't know why that one vote was put in there.
Now, Stevenson, who was used to running statewide in Texas in his races for governor, obviously knew how the game was played and must have been pretty upset when he saw where the winning margin for Johnson came from.
Yes, that's a very pertinent observation, because he knew what had happened, I would guess. And Salas said that he told Mr. Stevenson during the controversy over the election, he said, Stevenson, the only reason you're mad is that this time the votes didn't go your way as they had in the past. Meaning that up until this election, Stevenson had been in the Parr camp and had benefited from the vote that Parr chose to provide from South Texas for Stevenson. Stevenson had never been defeated in an election. He was a tremendously attractive candidate, three times governor of Texas, a man of dignity and authority, and he really resented not winning this election. And he fought like the devil to have the Johnson victory overturned. He came close to it by causing an official investigation into fraud in Jim Wells County. However, an order from the U.S. Supreme Court in the middle of this investigation brought it to an abrupt halt. Stevenson had come to the end of the road, and Johnson was declared the party's nominee.
Who ordered the halt of the investigation?
That was an order from Judge Hugo Black of the U.S. Supreme Court, who sent a telegram to a federal district judge in Fort Worth who had issued an injunction withholding Johnson's name from the ballot until this investigation into fraud could be completed. Black's telegram stopped the judge's injunction with the comment that it was not right for a federal judge to interfere in a state election. In effect, therefore, he threw the election to Johnson, because the only way Stevenson could have won is if the investigation proved vote fraud.
And with the ham-handed attempt at changing the outcome of the election in Box 13, there's a good chance that it would have been uncovered in an investigation, right?
Yes, indeed. Ham-handed is the proper word. It was done almost in contempt of any investigation, it would seem, in hindsight. Salas himself said, absolutely, no doubt, a fraud could have been proven if the investigation had continued, probably for just another day or two. They would have been able to prove vote fraud. However, the telegram from Washington stopped things in the middle, and there was no chance thereafter to ever prove a fraud. The poll lists, the tally lists vanished. No one knows to this day what happened to them, including Salas. The ballot, the actual ballot box was opened in the court just as the telegram came halting the investigation. There were ballots inside, but since the investigation was stopped, there was no point in pursuing it, and those were subsequently burned as prescribed by law. All ballots are burned, I think it is 30 days after an election.
And therefore, Lyndon Johnson's election was safe for his victory.
Oh, totally safe. His election was secured once the investigation was halted, because he did have, on paper, an 87-vote margin. And this was subsequently certified by the State Democratic Committee.
Well, now Harry Truman has a part in this story, too. He was, I believe, in Texas at the time this election was being investigated.
Yes, he was. The official investigation into fraud or possible fraud convened on a Monday, September 27th, 1948. On that very day, Harry Truman's campaign train had rolled into Texas from El Paso to San Antonio. It stayed overnight at San Antonio on the 26th, and then on Monday the 27th, the day the probe was just getting underway, it moved north from San Antonio to San Marcos, Austin, Temple, Dallas, and up into Oklahoma. Salas told me that while the train was in San Antonio, Lyndon Johnson, George Parr, and one or two other party officials from Jim Wells County boarded the train and had a conference with Harry Truman. Now, this is what Salas has told me. The records that I've been able to locate do not prove that such a meeting took place. We do know the train was there. We do know that Lyndon Johnson was on the train. In fact, at San Marcos on that Monday, Lyndon Johnson introduced Truman at his for his speech from the train in San Marcos. And then farther up the state, about perhaps 100 miles north at Temple, Texas, on that same afternoon, Monday, Truman endorsed Johnson as the next senator from Texas who deserved everybody's vote in the general election. Well, actually, the probe was just getting underway that very day to determine if Stevenson or Johnson was the legitimate winner of the election.
And a federal judge had said, with the outcome of this election, I find that it's impossible to determine a winner of this election. Is
That's
right?
Correct. The federal judge said an investigation was mandatory to determine if fraud had taken place. Also on that same Monday, according to the records, Justice Black agreed to hear a petition from Lyndon Johnson's lawyers in Washington seeking to overturn that federal judge's injunction, which was keeping Johnson's name off the ballot. The petition for Johnson in Washington was presented by Abe Fortas, whom, as you know, in later years was himself named to the High Court by President Johnson.
Then had to resign.
And then resigned under fire, right. Okay, this was on Monday when Black agreed to hear the petition and Truman endorsed Johnson from his campaign train. It was just 2 days later, on Wednesday, that the telegram from Black came to Texas, bringing everything to a screeching halt and, in effect, making Johnson the party's nominee. And perhaps it's worth noting that George Parr, whom Salas said was on the train in San Antonio with President Truman, had himself, that is Parr, had himself received a pardon from Truman 2 years earlier for federal income tax evasion, a federal income tax evasion conviction.
And there were some other well-known Texas names connected with, later to be better known names connected with Johnson in this situation, weren't there?
Yes, the cast of characters was quite impressive. One of Johnson's lawyers in Texas during the whole Box 13 investigation, or Box 13 scandal, whichever you choose to call it, was John Connally, who of course became a cabinet officer and governor of Texas. Connally was a lawyer then on Johnson's staff, and he participated in the events in not only in Alice, but in Fort Worth, where Judge Davidson had issued that injunction. The record shows that Connally was in Fort Worth working on Johnson's behalf to prevent that injunction from being issued.
The one that said that no one had won the race and there has to be an investigation?
Yes, the one, that's right. The injunction kept Lyndon Johnson's name off the Democratic Party ballot until an investigation could be held to determine if fraud had been involved in the runoff contest.
Just to keep things straight, was did Salas claim that Connally was present at that meeting in Alice where Lyndon Johnson said, "I need 200 more votes"?
Oh, no, he did not. In fact, Salas, I believe, was totally unaware of any role that John Connally played in this whole affair. Salas has not mentioned Connally's name in all of our interviews. He never once mentioned Connally's name. The reason I know about Connally's involvement is from the record of that period and newspaper stories from that period.
Sounds like you've done a lot of background just in digging through old records and accounts of the day.
Yes, I have. I think I've read every scrap of information pertaining to Box 13, and there's a lot of it. There for weeks it was drawing headlines. It was the top story in most Texas papers and really around the country. The hearing in Alice, for example, drew reporters from all over the United States. This was a major national news story. But I have read everything written about it, and I think I must qualify as an expert on Box 13 at this point.
You ever run across anyone or any document that disputes or contradicts what Louis Salas told you about this case?
No, I have not. Salas's account really goes along with the speculation that has been prevalent ever since the election. In a sense, you might say it was an open secret that things had been manipulated, but it just never was proven. And this account that Salas has now given, I'm sure, will be of tremendous interest all over the state, but I don't think it will be come as a great shock or surprise to most knowledgeable observers, because they more or less suspected this is exactly what had happened.
But it had quite an impact in terms of political history.
Yes, indeed. You could very truthfully say that what happened in this little precinct in this little town in South Texas actually changed the course of history, not just American history, but world history. Because as one person down there put it, really this way a person became president 15 years later who really perhaps shouldn't have, because he did not win the contest for the U.S. Senate.
That was his first statewide bid.
That was his first statewide win. And of course, as everybody knows, his career then just steadily ascended through his years as the powerful Senate leader and then into the presidency following the assassination of Kennedy. And it all might not have happened had things not been manipulated in Alice, Texas, in 1948.
Why is Louis Salas, a man who has such a central role in this case, not commissioner of highways in Texas or, better off than he is now?
Well, that's a good question, but actually Salas played more or less of a functionary's role. He was not in authority in his role as election judge, he was following the orders of George Parr, who had, of course, made him election judge. He had an important role to fulfill, but he was taking orders, not giving them. And he has shown me letters on several matters with Lyndon Johnson. These do not indicate any special favorite treatment from Mr. Johnson, although I do recall Salas said that then-Senator Johnson offered to